Well, I'm going to bring up David and Meg Robbins, and for those of you who have not met them, the president and first lady of family life.
Thanks, Meg.
Don't you love being called that?
Yes, of course.
Yes, and we are so glad to have you guys here, and I'm really glad that we picked aren't you glad that we picked Charleston? Yeah?
I am.
Because the other option was Texarkana, and I just felt like... I don't
There is a great coffee shop. I'm a coffee snob, and there's one great coffee shop in Texarkana.
Yeah. But that would not have... So, donor team, I'm glad you won Charleston one out. So, we appreciate that. So, how long have you guys been married? How many kids do you have?
We've been married almost 18 years this next month in November. And kid-wise?
Four kids. They are 13, 11, 9, and 3 years old. So, boy, girl, boy, boy.
Yeah, so right in the thing of it.
Yes.
So yes. I want to know how many cities you've lived in since you've been married.
Oh, that's great.
Gosh, well, we know the one you met, too.
Okay. Because we did live there married, too.
Okay.
That's true. So we met in Oxford, Mississippi, both went to the University of Mississippi, and Crew, which was a ministry we were involved in, that Family Life is the parent organization of Family Life, we were trying out co-ed community groups one semester. And there so happened to be a cute freshman in my co-ed community group that I was co-leading. And so over this semester, I just go, who is this freshman? Oh, my word. And I just got to see her heart on display every week. And the day the Bible study ended, I asked her out. So we dated through college, served with Crew at Ole Miss for a few years, and that led us on quite a journey. And we got married in that time, obviously. And inside of our wedding band is Joshua 1:16. And it was the people's response to Joshua as Moses had passed the baton to Joshua and headed into the promised land. And it says, wherever you will send us, we will go. Whatever you command us to do, we will do. And when we married, we signed a covenant and contract to the Lord of, we're bondservants for you, Lord, whatever that means. And we had no clue what it was mean. It certainly meant a few locations.
So the next place we went was Pisa, Italy. That was with Crew. So we both had come on staff with Crew. Stayed in Oxford at Ole Miss for a couple years, and then we went to Italy, and we thought we'd be overseas for the long haul, I think. I mean, we thought we'd at least have some kids there, and the Lord had a different plan, and we came back to the University of Georgia, so Athens. We lived in Athens for 3 years. That's when we started having kids. Two were born there. Well, actually, anyway, during that time, that's another story. And then we moved to Atlanta. So we lived in Atlanta. Anybody keep count? Because I really don't even know the answer to that. I've never counted. Atlanta, David was a regional or slash national director there. And that, you know, it's interesting. That was a really great gift fit for him. I think we were thriving in a lot of ways. I think my hair is...
I think it might be that earring that's bouncing.
Probably is.
Just
still.
A little bit.
Oh, I'll try to be real
still. Where we could also give you that mic and just cut that mic off.
We might have to do that.
Why don't we do that?
That's good.
Jim, can you cut off? Thank
All right.
you, sir.
Perfect. Ooh, I'm a lot louder on here.
That's okay.
So in Atlanta, it was a great gift fit. We really loved it, and we're thriving in a lot of ways. But the Lord just began to kind of pull at our hearts and just kind of make us realize, I think we just, is this what we really signed up for when we said we'll go anywhere and do anything? And so the Lord just began a process that, long story short, landed us in New York City. So we lived there for 5 years, and then Little Rock, Arkansas, after that. So
here we are.
And
now, yes, and we're adding another one. Soon. We'll come
seven
back
is
to
a
that,
biblical
sure.
number, so I'm cool with that. We can stop right now.
Right
that's
there.
Such a good attitude.
Good attitude.
That's great.
Well, speaking of New York, that's such an interesting move. So what was Manhattan like, and what was New York all about? Why did you go there? What was it like living there as a family? Yeah. And tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. Well, God had been stirring in each one of us this desire to go back to the front lines and learn in a place that would push us in a secular environment, a post-Christian environment of how do we effectively share the gospel and penetrate the gospel into people's lives effectively in our increasingly secular society. And so we didn't know all what that meant. We thought it might mean Miami or in other places. We were like, Lord, wherever. And it ended up meaning New York. We learned in New York that a family of six can thrive in 900 square feet. We actually loved
it. Say that again, just so we know. I don't know that everybody got that, how many square feet it was.
It was 900 amazing square feet. It was awesome. Way too expensive, but it was 900 square feet. And what we did there was work with 20-somethings that after they graduated college, moved into the city and different cities. We were leading this national network of millennials moving to cities. And we just saw this trend of people not getting connected to local churches. So we served two major roles there. One was connecting disconnected people back to Jesus and the church. And to be that in between and connect people to the sustainable place of the local church. And the other was to raise up and develop leaders for the local church, leaders of this next generation that, you know, certainly have uniquenesses, but we really believe in. And when God catches fire in their life, it's so fun to see how they live it out and how they serve.
Yeah, one of the things we realized pretty quickly, whether it was millennials that we were spending time with or even families, our kids were in public school there. And so we lived in the same neighborhood with all the families we went to school with, and it was about 500, 800 kids, so about 500 families. And there were probably 6 families who went to church regularly and were believers. Mm-hmm. So just we realized pretty quickly that whether millennials or these families, not many people were up for coming to church with us. But they were really quick to come sit around our table and just share life together. Or we would go to their house and sit around their living room or the playground. And we just saw how our conversation, when you're talking about, I mean, most people want to be good parents, you know, and we're all struggling with the same kinds of things that our kids are going through. And as we're sitting there and talking about these things, the conversations, not always, but oftentimes would come back to spiritual things and just why are you, that's interesting you had your kids say you're sorry, but why do you make them say, you know, I forgive you, or just little things, you know? So,
yeah. I mean, we really, before even family life was in the picture, we were talking about marriage and family is the pathway into people's lives and into spiritual conversations. And I mean, so much, one time I remember, it's probably a little hyperbole, but, you know, just going, I really do think that marriage and family is like the last, evangelistic voice in the West. I mean, it's just, we so quickly get to be able to get into gospel conversations through the pathway of marriage and family. And so grateful God was embedding that.
Yeah. And you think, I know from your story and from just being around you guys love the city. Mm-hmm. Your family loved the city. You had a great ministry, thriving ministry. And I'm trying to think how many people I've heard say, man, we want to leave Manhattan to go to Little Rock, Arkansas. I can't think of how many people have said that to me over the years. So what were you thinking when somebody approached you and said, you know what you ought to do after being here for 5 years? You ought to take over for a founder of 40 years for family life in Little Rock, Arkansas.
Yeah, I don't think anyone wakes up one day and goes, I have an amazing idea. Let me take over for a 4-decade founder who's really well known and, you know, just step right into those shoes. You know, no, that is such an intimidating thing, mm-hmm. and something that we really took seriously of, Lord, this, our exact quote to the board member who was inviting us to be a candidate was, well, you're set. Hold on. The first comment I said was, are there lots of other candidates? And they go, well, yeah, there's other candidates. And I go, well, good, because I just want this to be a long road. Like, if we're exploring this, this will be good for our growth. Who knows? But let it be a long road. And then I said,
we were actually in Orlando for a crew meeting at the time. And I said, I think if you'd been with us at Disney today, I don't think you'd be asking us to lead a marriage and family ministry. So that was just my true colors moment that, you know, yeah. I had probably lost my patience that day.
I think Disney pretty much tests everybody's sanctification.
Amen.
Let's
to
just
that.
Say that.
We contributed to the 3 p.m. Mickey meltdowns. We did it. We
for
left
sure.
our mark. It was great.
Sure.
So what was it for you guys that brought you to that place where you said, I think, you know, like going back to that verse in Joshua, mm-hmm. you know, if you're leading me, I will go where you're led. So where was it? Tell us, bring us to that place.
Yeah. I mean, part of it was a lot of God's nudges, because we were not begging for this role. It was out of left field. It didn't fit in a category of what we thought our future would be. And so part of it was, all right, we want to be with Dennis and Barbara on a good chunk of time here. And we want to spend some time with board members to even just understand what they're looking for. So there was the practical side of, you know, in this process, we got a little MBA on founder successions by reading a ton. And there's all sorts of great advice. I think I was sharing some of this over dinner, but there's all sorts of great advice. And then the last chapter always is, it just depends upon the founder. it all. And first and foremost, hearing their hearts through the process, we felt so pursued, Dennis and Barbara's. And before we go into any more details, they have been amazing. Like it so often just depends upon the founders and whether they really do release and how much they have platformed us so incredibly. And just the character of all that we know about them has just shined. And it's been amazing. But backtracking, yeah.
Yeah, I think one of going back to just even how did we work through and walk through it, I think for us personally, especially watching Dennis and Barbara, I mean, all of our years on staff, we've known who they were and seen them lead from a distance. And I think there was a lot of the feeling of, wow, I don't know that we have what it takes, Lord. Like, we're not anywhere near where they are in life. And it was a process of just constantly the Lord kept bringing us back to, I am not calling the able, I'm calling the willing. I'm going to do the work. I just need you to be willing. And there were many times where I think we thought, you know, how in the world does somebody follow them? But
I mean, what's funny is kind of a life verse and mantra but that we have is if dependence is the goal, weakness is an advantage. And we were like, Lord, this is too much weakness exposed here. You know, like, no, this puts us in that place. And he's like, no, I'm inviting the two of you into this. But we had our moments of wrestling.
Yeah, well, one Sunday, we were still living in New York at the time, and David was out of town, and I was walking the kids to church, and we're walking down 2nd Avenue, and if you've ever been in a big city with a group of people, and so we have 4 kids, so we're all spread out across the sidewalk. My kids know you kind of have to walk single file or 2x2 at the most. And they're all over the place, running around, knocking people over almost. I felt like they were. And I am like, you know, come over here, try to stay in line. And I just, you know, lose my patience and who knows what I said and had a very public moment of bad parenting in the middle of the sidewalk. And I get to church. Get everybody checked into their class, and he'd been gone for like 3 days, so I'm definitely have hit survival mode. And I texted David and said, "I just don't think we can do this."
Yeah, or, no. You always soften it.
I probably said,
"You did text me and said,
I always soften this.
Hey, we're not doing it. Talk to you later."
And I go,
"Oh, okay."
Okay. But the sermon that day. Tim Keller was preaching on John chapter 21 when he's talking to Peter, and Peter, you know, has denied Jesus 3 times, and now this is after Jesus is back and he's risen, and he says, "Peter, do you love me? Then feed my sheep." And he asks him 3 times, and he just is reiterating, "I know that you denied me 3 times." He's letting him see his failure in full form, but yet Jesus, in his tenderness, is saying, "But I am enough, and I fully love you. You are fully restored. And because you're taking that mess up, and you're still here plunging it right into me and who I am, I'm enough to cover this." And it was like the Lord just said, "Do you trust me? You're still going to feel this way. You're not going to suddenly become the most amazing mom, super mom, you know, just because you say yes to this. You're still going to mess up. Sin is still going to be there, as much as I'd like to think it's not. And yet, do I believe that he's sufficient, not me?"
And I mean, deep down, what there was the Lord's calling that really ended up being significantly clear, and that's why we said yes. Mm-hmm. But there is this strong belief of we really do believe that marriage and family is one of the most incredible ways to get the gospel forward. If we, the distinctive of family life is the Great Commission and making disciples who make disciples who make disciples. The form of inside the home and homes to other homes, it is the early church lived out, and we love getting to be a part of it. So
if you had all those feelings, now you've been in the role for a while. How many years have you been in the role?
We're a few months shy of 2 years.
So okay, it's so still almost fresh. 2 years. Yeah, 2 years. Good job. You guys have been doing so good.
Oh, man.
I'm so proud of you. You're sweet.
There will be gray hair. There is gray hair now. That's
so
true.
So what have you learned? What is something that has surprised you? Have you become super mom?
Definitely not.
Yes, you have. Just kidding. You're a great mom.
You're sweet.
But what are some things that have surprised you or things that you've learned from now these 2 years of after saying the yes?
You know, one thing I think that comes to mind right away is just that, well, before, one of the things we learned and God just called us into, I think, when we were working with millennials, was just the need to be authentic and to be willing to show where we mess up and where we fall short. And
to really go past authentic into vulnerability, yeah, of more present tense reality and how Jesus is meeting you in that place. Yeah.
True. And I think there's definitely a great temptation in this role to present as super mom or super dad, or that we always have family devos when we mean to or whatever. And the Lord has pushed in a lot and just like, you know, the authenticity and the vulnerability that I've marked on you, you need to stay in that place. And that's hard and humbling, because certainly there are many days and many moments in every day when I feel, you know, my own weakness. But it's just like David said, if dependence is the goal, weakness is an advantage, and it just shows what God can do, not me. So, yeah.
David, you got to tell the story, because I think this illustrates exactly what you're saying, Meg, very clearly. And David didn't know what I'm about to ask.
What are you about to ask?
But I'm going to put you on the spot anyway. But the difference between New York and Little Rock and Target Christmas.
Okay,
shopping for Christmas.
We moved to Little Rock on December 22nd. All right, so kids had gotten out of school late in New York, and we wanted them to finish and say all the goodbyes. And then it's like the 23rd, and we have done we're moving. And Family Life staff, Mary Herndon being one of them, did an amazing job getting our house. I mean, it felt like Christmas. It was amazing. But there were no gifts yet, and so at least for between each other in our home. And so I'm taking the kids to Target solo and giving Meg a break to keep settling in while they buy presents for each other. And so we're, you know, all over Target at who knows what hour. And at some point, I have my public moment, which in New York, you're kind of okay. You know, you have your first public cry, and that's like a rite of passage in New York, and then you just realize everything's public, and it's kind of healthy. Like, who you really are shows, and it's a good thing for your growth and sanctification. But, you know, we're in Little Rock, and just arguments and whatnot, and I finally just go, guys, everybody, look at here right now. Come to me right now. Look at my eyes. Well, actually, we have the line, blueberries. I want to see your blueberries, because Oliver has it, because that blue has blueberries right now. And I go, in Little Rock, people know who you are. And we got 30 more minutes in here, and you need to fall in line. And you're going, oh, my word. And so that night, we get home, and just the conviction of the Holy Spirit. I'm going, I'm on day two of officially being in this job. And the Holy Spirit going, David, you're already performing. You want your kids to perform on your behalf. Go repent. Go repent. Mm-hmm. And every home is a godly home does not mean a home where no smoking ever takes place by the right. kids. And, you know, it's like, it's not the perfect home. Mm-hmm. I hope my kids never smoke. And one has cystic fibrosis. It'd be really bad. But, you know, it's not the perfect little home. It's the often repentant, frequently surrendering, reflecting Jesus and the tangible nature of his grace and the rawness of life. That we all walk through, that's a godly home that ends up making ripples and an impact that changes a community and changes a neighborhood and changes a church. And so it was within 48 hours of being in Little Rock that all these pressures and whatnot, the Spirit gave me a moment to go, hey, remember that thing about weakness? Lean into it. So, yeah. I think another thing of surprise that's worth noting is just I knew about Family Life's events and resources and conferences and radio and all the amazing things that we put out there to seek to give help and hope to people's families and marriages. What I underestimated that has been so fun to interact with time and time again is just this network and really army of people passionate about serving families around them. And there's small group leaders, and there's leaders in countries and all these different places around the world, and there's lay leaders in churches leading marriage ministries in churches, because 84% of churches don't have marriage ministries, and they're connected to us and passionate about taking the gospel out and helping families around them. And it's just been one of the treats of our 2 years to be able to interact with those people and just go, this is what we're about. This is, we're so grateful to get to join in with it.
You know, I don't know if you guys have read this. This is actually meant for you to be read. So if you haven't gotten it, looked at it. But I liked your first line in here because I think it hits on what you're saying. Families are vitally important. They're the most untapped resource on the planet to help fulfill the Great Commission and cause societal change. I'm convinced that God is working through the family to do far beyond all we could ask or imagine. And so, you know, just speak to that untapped resource. Why do you think that's such a crucial element of family life?
Yeah. Well, we've probably had themes of it as we've shared of what even drew us to family life, where we're going, this is a little crazy, and I'm not going to be able to fill the shoes, but we'll fill the role, and we'll trust God, because we do think families are the most untapped resource. And there'd be two main reasons. One is, well, you go to Psalm 145, you go to Psalm 78, and generation passing on to the next generation, the works of God and the evidence of his hand and the principles and the gospel itself of where life is found. And then you also just have this reality of God sent people out two by two. And he sent people out, Acts 1:8, in their community and then regions, and to trust God for things bigger than themselves, beyond what just their home. And his last words were ascending, of go make disciples. And we just see the power of not only making disciples within a home, but the power of a couple or a family, making disciples with people around them. Not everyone would come to church with us. And we love it when people get connected to the sustainable place of a local church. There's nothing better. But when it comes to reaching people far from God and far from the church, to have a family on fire for Jesus, repenting, surrendering, reflecting him in their neighborhood, doing life on life, and people getting to see Jesus alive and well over and over and over again. Not only does it lead to people coming to Christ and being formed into his likeness, it leads to actually neighborhoods beginning to flourish and communities, real families joining together going, this isn't just about us discipling each other and inviting each other into a small group community. How can we make a dent and a difference in the community God's called us to and the neighborhoods God has called us to? And I think God's going to always lift our eyes to a bigger vision than ourselves. That's what he does all the time. It's great. I mean, we always need to be working in our own lives with him, but he's always going to lift our heads going, and I put you in this place for a reason, to invest in the people I've put you around. I've put you around these people. And I just think the neighborhood and community flourishing that can happen is one of the things that gets us most stoked about being in this role. Yeah.
That's great. Well, I know part of your role is that you guys are about to go through some pretty intense training as a couple. You nervous?
I've heard that the trainees are the most, you know, fall in line or else people on the planet.
There's so some really
that'd
hard
be you
instructors.
Guys. So yeah. we are about to go through Weekend to Remember speaker training. Well, we'll officially join the team. So we took 2 years before joining the team, and we're really excited about being part of it. And grateful for
and
all you're doing.
And we will be training you.
And you. Mm-hmm. And you
so get ready.
There
Yay.
It is. Yeah.
50% of people don't make it. So I just want to know.
That's great.
That's a great group of people.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
You know, you spend a lot of time with people, especially people like people in this room mm-hmm. that have decided to partner with Family Life in a significant way. What have you learned about being around and rubbing shoulders with folks that are like the ones sitting right here and their passion and about what you're excited about with them?
I think one of our most favorite things, when you asked this question earlier, maybe it was what's in this
surprising. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking about just the stories that are represented. I mean, we've not spoken with all of you. We know some of you. And just the stories of what God has done in the marriages represented in here and through you. And it's really overwhelming to hear, and not that these are the stories in here, but recently we heard a story of a couple who, I mean, you know, you hear the stories of people who came to Weekend to Remember, they brought divorce papers and they tore them up on the spot. But I think what's amazing is to hear when God does something significant, or like Anita and Fred were sharing, in their own marriage, and they're like, how do we give this to more people? How do we, and just the generosity. I mean, Gene was saying it earlier, but there's just no way to fully say thank you, just because it's really overwhelming to see what God does when people say, what we have to give this away. And what does that look like? And it's just, yeah, I mean, I think it's really overwhelming and a gift to be a part. I think sometimes I just sit back and listen to stories or read updates and just think, oh my goodness, look what God is doing. It's overwhelming for sure.
And we get the unique, it really is a privilege to be able to stand on a foundation and on the shoulders of Dennis and Barbara, and the entire Family Life team, who for over four decades have been cultivating and all this, the vision and mission to where we are today. And as we get to ask the question fairly often of, okay, how did you first get involved with Family Life, or why do you invest in Family Life? Really, three things consistently surface to the top. One would be their own transformation story. The second would be, I love Family Life's commitment to get the gospel out. Like, this isn't just, there's lots of marriage and family help out there, and it's all, there's tons of great stuff, but your commitment to have the gospel integrated, I love the Great Commission focus of Family Life. And then the third is, and I really care about the next generation. I love how this transition's happening. I love that you're actually not just status quoing it, going, how can we ride it? But how can we go beyond into, because many of us in this room have grandkids or have adult children, some of you, and you just go, oh, how do we get the help to them in the same ways a previous generation was helped? And how do we equip them to go help others? That is a deep passion that is very consistent. And it's so fun to get to link arms with people like you. Yeah.
Well, we're excited to hear more about that, and you guys are going to hear more from David and Meg throughout these next couple days just about how we're going to go from generation to generation. But I just want to say personally, Jen and I have been not watching it from the sidelines. I wouldn't say it's been that, because we've been very much involved with it.
Yeah.
But, you know, they say that, especially in the Olympics, you always hear about the danger of the exchange zone in a relay and just how easy it is to blow the race in a matter of just a nanosecond. And it takes great focus on the part of the one handing it off and on the one receiving it. Mm-hmm. And watching you and Dennis and Barbara, it's rare in the board. I feel like the board members that are here have been hugely helpful in this. Mm-hmm. It's a reason why founder transitions don't happen very often. Mm-hmm. And I just want to say that I appreciate Dennis and Barbara's humility and authenticity, and your humility and authenticity to make sure that the exchange zone happened and the baton is carrying forward. And so we really want to appreciate you guys. And would you guys give David and Meg a hand?